From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The recent Federal Communications Commission vote to end net neutrality took place in spite of massive bipartisan public protest, potentially paving the way for internet service providers to create multi-tiered systems on the web and undermine independent voices. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, a former attorney for Verizon, vehemently denied that his decision would impact internet freedom. Verizon is among the biggest beneficiaries of the decision. But how can a five-person appointed panel really upend the desires of millions of Americans? Well, the fight for net neutrality is not over. And many are now calling on Congress to take legislative action by passing a resolution of disapproval through the Congressional Review Act. And grassroots internet freedom groups like Free Press are readying lawsuits against the FCC over its decision. My guest is Craig Aaron, president and CEO of Free Press, a leading advocate in the fight to preserve net neutrality. Welcome to the program, Craig.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, how inspired were you, first of all, by the public showing in support of net neutrality? It was a pretty amazing fight. We've had this fight many times before, it feels like. And in the past, it has been won. This time it was lost, but still, it was a good fight.
I'm blown away, honestly, by what happened over just the last few weeks. I've been fighting on net neutrality since 2005. I've been through all the ups and downs in this fight over the last decade plus, and we've never seen more public energy, more public awareness than we saw in the last couple of weeks. I mean, we had more than a million phone calls going into Congress. Some were saying offices were reporting they were getting more calls about net neutrality than they were about taxes. We saw the internet, all corners of the internet, really just exploding with awareness and interest, places you would never expect it. The Reddit channels dedicated to talking about NASCAR, Black Twitter, religious groups, you name it, we're all talking about net neutrality and putting really an immense amount of pressure on the FCC. So I'm taking a lot from that, despite the vote last week, that there's a lot of fight still ahead because people are so aware, they're so mad that this is being taken away, that that gives us a lot of energy to push back and fix what the FCC did.
Well, Ajit Pai basically has claimed that these fears of what will happen to the internet are overblown. So can you lay out for us what's at stake? What is the worst case scenario that if the FCC decision is left to itself could transpire over the next few years and the internet as we know it could be a different beast?
Yeah, that's right. I think the real danger is that the internet, the free and open internet that we are used to, when we go online, you go wherever you want, you do whatever you want, you download whatever you want, your internet experience is up to you, that goes away. And the free and open internet is replaced by something that looks a lot like cable television, with a couple of big companies really picking and choosing the channels for you, creating different tiers of service where they can charge you more for special access to certain things. They can cut off access to other things that they don't like. That could be the world that we're entering. And at first, it's going to be more subtle. They're going to begin to mess with things around the edges, changing your experience. You log on to listen to this program, for example, and you suddenly find yourself facing that spinning wheel of death. And you don't know, is it my internet connection? Is it something that Pacifica did wrong? Or are the cable companies messing with that connection? And in that kind of uncertainty, it's going to be hard to keep track of what these guys are doing. And the FCC has basically said, we don't care. As long as they're transparent, whatever that means, we're not going to interfere. We're not going to even have the authority to step in when there's a problem. And we know that all of these companies, big phone companies, big cable companies, I believe them when they talk to each other, when they talk to their investors, when they're under oath in court. And in all of those places, they've made clear they do intend to discriminate. They do intend to create special fast lanes for their own content. They do intend to create a fast lane for some and a slow lane for everybody else. And I'm afraid that that's what, if we can't overturn this in court, if we can't fight back in Congress, that that's the kind of internet experience we may start to have.
So the fact that these companies are, and it's a handful of companies that are going to benefit from this particular decision, they will probably not, as you said, jump headfirst into changing things around because they know that people would get very upset. So we're going to start to see smaller changes, as you said, and eventually we will maybe forget about this time when we had the freedom to browse whatever we wanted and not have our internet service provider telling us what we can and can't view. Does all of this seem to be premised on an idea that the free market, the so-called free market, mythical free market, should decide everything and how things should shape up? If people want content, they should, or want the freedom, they should pay for it, rather than seeing the internet as a public commons like we might see, our natural forests.
Yeah, I think that is part of what's going on here. There was an article written in Fortune magazine last week which described the FCC chairman as drunk on ideology. And I think that does explain some of what he's doing, that at some fundamental level, Ajit Pai, the head of the FCC, believes that all regulation is bad and regulations passed by the Obama administration are worse. And that's kind of been his driving push throughout his tenure as the head of the FCC. But where it gets really tricky is that what he's really doing is picking winners and losers here and giving an immense amount of power to these already powerful companies that have no interest in a true free market. They're not actually interested in competition. They're interested in gatekeeper control. They're interested in abusing the monopoly power that they have over the wires, over the pipes that go into our home to control what we watch, see, hear, and read. And so you've got an interesting situation where the public good of a free and open internet with lots of voices actually dovetails pretty well with a competitive market when it comes to new and innovative companies getting online, developing new products. They actually share some of the same goals here. Those just aren't the goals shared by powerful phone and cable companies. And if they're allowed to exploit the power that they have, they will kill that free and open internet. And I do worry that we'll forget what we once had, because we've seen this story before, whether it's radio, television, cable TV, the initial promise of those media being taken away and concentrated in just a few hands.
So what is the recourse now? That massive public energy that went into trying to convince this, the 3 out of 5 commissioners on the FCC to not vote to end net neutrality, what can they pour their energy into now?
Well, I think the political landscape has completely changed in the last couple of weeks. And so you are seeing a lot of activity on Capitol Hill. We are pushing something called a resolution of disapproval. This is power Congress has to overturn regulations that they don't like. Of course, this is a power that is usually used to gut environmental protections and kill privacy protections and things like that. But this is a time to actually use it for good and overturn what the FCC is doing. There's a bill prepared by Senator Markey of Massachusetts, already with 23 senators on board. That'll be introduced once these rules are finalized. There's a companion version in the House. The resolution of disapproval is the legislation we need. We don't need some new fancy fix. We need to just get rid of what the FCC just did. And at the same time, we are going to be going to court. Free Press is joining with a number of its allies, and I imagine there'll be others filing suit to challenge these rules. We believe we have a very strong case. We've won before in the federal courts on these issues. The FCC has certainly lost before on these issues, and we think there's a chance to overturn in these courts. So we do not believe Ajit Pai and Donald Trump are going to have the last word on net neutrality, and there's still a big political fight ahead.
There's also, I understand, legal efforts to legally challenge through lawsuits the basis of the FCC's decision, particularly, and the FCC, I think, would like us to forget that there's been a very strong challenge to comments that they say were made in favor of ending net neutrality. There's been documentation showing that many of these were simply sort of created by bots, potentially to change public to change the perception that the public is for net neutrality. Is that something that your organization and others are pursuing?
definitely paying close attention because it's part of the FCC's refusal to address this is part of the way they've really abused the public process. The Attorney General of New York approached the FCC trying to get them to cooperate on an investigation. The FCC refused, and evidence is surfacing that there are maybe millions of comments. There were 22 million comments filed on net neutrality, which is more than has been filed on really any topic ever. But it turns out that a number of them were fake. They were bots. They were using people's information, perhaps retrieved in hacks and other things, to file comments under their name, but they didn't actually believe in. And so there's been journalists, senators, people whose deceased relatives are in the docket. And it seems pretty clear that a lot of these were used to file comments against net neutrality. And then when they got caught doing that, they started filing fake comments for net neutrality, all trying to muddy the waters and make it so that they didn't have to take the comments seriously, even though the vast majority, 99% of the comments that are clearly attributable to individuals, those all go against Ajit Pai and Donald Trump's FCC. So, and we're seeing that in the public response to what they've done. Congressional offices are telling me they're getting 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 calls for net neutrality, zero supporting the FCC. So it's very clear where the public stands, and it's increasingly clear that there was an effort to mess with the system and try to make essentially the public comment system unreliable, which is something we've seen in a couple of dockets, not just at the FCC, but also at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and other places where we believe most likely companies or those who are working for them or auditioning to work for them are looking to interfere with these public comment processes.
I mean, why would a member of the public want a big company to have more power to charge them more? I mean, it just...
Yeah, it's a good question. It's not a very popular policy. But it is remarkable, as you talked about at the top, this is really bipartisan support. There was a poll out last week showing that 83% of Americans support net neutrality once it's explained to them. And I think, the other 17% are either lobbyists or just haven't realized they're being lied to yet. So this is a very popular issue, and it's one that politicians are now paying attention to in a new way because they see the incredible public response that's, been built through organizing and communications over the last decade, but is now really, coming home to roost in a new way that looks different than the earlier chapters in this fight.
Now, will some of the big corporations that were also in favor of net neutrality, that sort of stood on the opposite side of groups like companies like Verizon and AT&T, such as Netflix and other streaming services, will they, you think, pour their vast resources and clout into the fight to bring back net neutrality?
Well, I think it's hard to say. A lot of them have been very quiet. I mean, at Free Press, we don't take any money from any of these companies, but we do, we can see who's active on this. And, some companies like Twitter, Netflix, they did speak out, especially during this last period, used their various channels to talk about their support for net neutrality. Some of the bigger companies have been sort of conspicuous in their in being very quiet. Now, of course, they're under a lot of pressure right now on Capitol Hill when it comes to things like fake news and Russian bots and things like that. So they may be keeping a low profile for that reason. But it's also that as some of these companies get really, really big, the Googles and Facebooks of the world, they have less incentive to fight for the rights of their potential future competitors. And that's why this has been a fight that's always been driven by public interest groups, by the grassroots groups, by internet users themselves, and sometimes by the employees of these companies who have been clamoring for their leadership to get involved. So I hope they do enter the fray, but we're also not waiting around for them.
So one very clear thing that viewers of this and listeners to this program can do is contact their congressional representatives to support the legislative effort that you mentioned to essentially undo the FCC decision, this resolution of disapproval using the Congressional Review Act, right?
Yes, resolution of disapproval to overturn the FCC's net neutrality rules. It will be introduced by Senator Markey in the Senate, by Congressman Doyle in the House. But yes, all those calls help, and they help right now.
And it's so critical, of course, for people to it's so critical for people to understand that this fight isn't over, because it's easy to become disillusioned and feel like, all right, I poured all my energy into this. We didn't win. Move on. And that's exactly what Free Press doesn't want to see happen, I know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, we have been fighting for this for 12 years with some ups and downs, but we really are confident that we could see Congress move on this, even if this Congress, which is not known for passing public interest legislation, doesn't overturn this. This becomes a referendum on where they stand. We can get every member of Congress on the record. That's going to come into play as we move into 2018. And as the courts move forward, we need to demonstrate time and again where the public stands on this issue if we're going to overturn what the FCC has done. Watching the incredible public response, seeing hundreds of people in the streets outside the FCC, hundreds of protests in every state across the country, I am actually optimistic that we can win this fight increasingly so. So we can't be discouraged by one vote at the FCC. We have to keep it up.
So, Craig, in the midst of all of this happening, there has been some pretty interesting moves in the media landscape as a whole, where the project of greater and greater media consolidation continues. We have fewer and fewer companies controlling media content, whether it's news media or it's entertainment media. And there have been a couple of huge mergers that have recently been announced. The Sinclair Tribune merger, which the FCC gave an approval to. And then recently, of course, we've heard Disney is buying Fox, 21st Century Fox. How do you put these mergers into the context of net neutrality and also what access, what control the public has over where it gets information?
Yeah, well, what you're seeing happen, and that Sinclair merger is not done yet, although it appears to be a done deal. They still have to have the final vote. But what we're seeing is a lot of these big companies really jockeying for this gatekeeper control wherever they can find it. And so you see it happening in the telecommunications with AT&T, trying to take over Time Warner. You've got Sinclair trying to expand to control television stations and reaching 72% of the country. And now you see Fox and Disney potentially trading properties here, with Disney becoming hugely powerful over our entertainment, maybe controlling as much as 40-50% of the box office in terms of Hollywood, and then Fox doubling down on its news and sports properties. So this is a battle for eyeballs, for control, and it all does connect back up to these media policy decisions. Sinclair has been pushing very hard at the FCC all year to obliterate longstanding limits on how much one company can own in a given market, how many television stations they control, and they've successfully done that. The FCC has gotten rid of those limits, although we'll see them in court as well to challenge that. And clearly Fox has a lot of interest in this. Now that they're getting rid of their movie studios, potentially, you're seeing Rupert Murdoch talk about expanding for even more control over local television. This is an attempt to control the news narrative. And anybody who's tuned into Sinclair or Fox during this presidency really sees an alternative reality. The news coverage on these stations looks nothing like the news being broadcast to the rest of us. It certainly looks nothing like the news and the stories being told on Pacifica or Free Speech TV. There's a lot of propaganda being repurposed on the airwaves, commentaries being snuck in between the local news and weather. And I think you're going to continue to see that. What all these big media companies have seen since Trump has come into office is they don't know how long this administration is going to last, but they're going to try to get theirs while they can.
Right.
And so they're trying to push every deal and merger that they can as fast as they can. And right now, the FCC is looking the other way. Interestingly, and one of the confusing things about the Trump administration is their Justice Department is actually throwing some wrenches into these attempts, suing AT&T, for example. So you've got the government on the one hand saying, wait, we can't allow you to undermine your competition. And then the other part of the government saying, oh, wait, we're going to make it easier for you to undermine your competition. So it's a confusing time. A lot is in flux, but it very much does have to do with controlling your eyeballs, controlling as much as you can the choices that you have, and pushing, in the case especially of Sinclair and Fox, pushing very specific political agendas into the nightly news.
Shouldn't all of these mergers be seen as violating antitrust laws, the kinds of laws that were established decades ago to prevent exactly this kind of thing?
Well, this is the big political fight ahead of us, because over the last, 30 or 40 years, antitrust has really been weakened. But you're seeing, and so it's really narrow terms that they'll use to even disrupt these mergers, but you're seeing a real groundswell of public opposition to this. And again, across the political spectrum, growing awareness that just allowing these, millions of mergers that have happened with really no recourse to continue is bad for the economy. It's bad for our democracy. And so I think you are seeing a whole new uprising, really, against this kind of corporate concentration from the left, in some cases from the right, really questioning this whole model of merge at all costs and showing how bad that's been for our economy. So I don't know if we can count on the Trump administration to lead this fight, but I know folks like Senator Elizabeth Warren have been incredibly outspoken on this topic. Groups like the Open Markets Institute have been raising these issues. And now it's a question of, are we going to match that with public, public opposition to these kind of deals? I think that increasingly politicians are getting an earful. You saw a completely different conversation happening in the last election about this, platforms changing, the idea of antitrust really being resuscitated. Congress is starting to pay attention. So this is maybe the fight that's ahead of us. Are we going to challenge these big companies, whether that's AT&T, Google, Fox, you name it? Are we going to really mount a challenge to them getting even bigger? Or are we going to allow this runaway consolidation that's been so harmful to communities, it's been so harmful to journalism, to continue unchecked?
Aren't there also content creators, let's use that term, on the right, that are smaller, that see themselves being swallowed up by the Sinclair and the Fox domination of their perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Places like Newsmax and some of these other companies, online startups that are challenging these companies from the right, are very concerned. And when you read some of their filings at the FCC, it looks like Free Press could have written them, because they're talking about media concentration. They're talking about the abuse of market power. So there are sort of strange bedfellow alliances available. And a lot of right-wing voices have spoken out against Sinclair because they see them consolidating that power. And they know that if they can dominate the local market and take in all of that election advertising and local advertising, that they're going to use that money to try to, defeat their competitors in the online realm. And they have the online news as well. So I think there, the last word has not been heard yet on these mergers. Even the Sinclair merger, the Justice Department still needs to sign off on it. The FCC needs to approve it. There's reasons that Sinclair is so optimistic, because the FCC in particular has shown they're willing to clear almost any obstacle in the path of this merger. But the public feels much differently. And there are a lot of folks who just want to develop their own new competing voices, their own new products, who recognize this is why net neutrality has traction on the right as well, because they recognize that they don't want big companies dictating what they can put out there and put online. So
you have fewer and fewer companies creating content, and more content, of course, consumed online. But the online delivery systems could be, now more and more in the hands of these companies that can that can discriminate between what you see and what you don't. The result is a pretty dystopian future for our internet freedom.
If we don't reverse this, I think it is truly dangerous and gets rid of so much of the great potential of the internet. And as we know, this has a lot to do with media, but this is also the way we talk to our families. This is increasingly, there's no organizing effort, no social justice effort that doesn't have an internet organizing component to it. So these are incredibly important venues for everything we do now. And I think that's why this issue of net neutrality, this obscure issue that we've been talking about for a long time, but is now entering really the public consciousness because people value that interconnection so much and they're living so much of their lives through that connection with their phones. It's how they're organizing. It's how they're talking to their families. And yes, it's also how they're being entertained. And it's why there's so much at stake in these decisions and these once obscure places like the Federal Communications Commission that still wield so much power.
And finally, Craig, a lot of this, people don't think about this, but there is also an angle to the economy. Congress measures economic health through the growth of giant corporations, but because of our increasingly unequal economy, millions of Americans have turned to internet-based businesses or the internet to get the word out about the work they do, independent content creators, artists, bloggers, etc., you name it. These are people who have innovated because of the internet to try to make a living. All of these things are also in jeopardy and could also really jeopardize the economic well-being of ordinary Americans. I mean, this is something that we don't hear enough about either.
Yeah, and I think those changes are only going to get more dramatic as we see more automation, as we see, and this is where the conversation about net neutrality and antitrust really converge. Because it is in having any of these big gatekeepers, whether that's AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast, or Google, at Facebook, and Amazon, having so much control over our online commerce, being able to take the data that they can extract just through our clicks and what we shop and who we talk to and where we buy and sell that and, you know, use it to sort of manipulate us. These are really big questions that we're not really dealing with yet politically or as a society, but they're coming very, very quickly. And we know these are amazing tools. And I can point to all the incredible things the internet has made possible, even us being able to have this conversation right now. But we know these are all tools. They can be used to liberate or they can be used to oppress. And those are the fights that we're going to be having over the next few years. And we know when we allow this kind of concentrated power, this kind of control, if we don't have a counterweight, and the best counterweight we have that can actually serve as one is the government. Is the government being able to step in and say, wait, this has gone too far. We need rules of the road. We need that referee out there to be able to shape things, to be able to stop the worst kind of behaviors so those small businesses, so those independent voices can actually thrive. We don't want the government to be in control of the internet any more than we want AT&T to be in it, but it's in achieving that balance that actually creates all of these great opportunities, more of what we want from the internet, which is so many, which is, you know, as many choices, as many new ideas as we can find, and us being in charge of our own internet experience. We can be trusted to make decisions for ourselves. We don't need these big companies making them for us. And that's a fight that is going to continue, you know, through this context of net neutrality, but also in a lot of other issues that are really reshaping our economy, reshaping our society, and that we're only beginning to appreciate.
Well, Craig, I want to thank you for all the work you do and for spending this time with us. What's the website for Free Press?
Freepress.net, and people can also check out battleforthenet.com, which is a great way to connect directly to your legislators and talk to them about net neutrality.
We'll post that to our website later today. Thank you, Craig.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
Craig Aaron is the president and CEO of Free Press and a leading advocate in the fight to preserve net neutrality. We've been discussing how the fight for net neutrality is not yet over. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.